Parshat Tetzaveh, and to be honest with you, Parshat Tetzaveh, usually we end up talking about Purim. Either Parshat Tetzaveh is Shabbat Zachor, so that gives us a chance to talk about Amalek and Purim and Gilad Esther, or else Parshat Tetzaveh is in a year like this, a full month in advance of all of the excitement. And yet, we somehow find a reason to talk about Purim, and we let it stare. One of the reasons is that Parshat Tetzaveh is a little bit of an inscrutable Parsha. Famously, there's somebody figured out at some point that Parshat Tetzaveh is the one Parsha that we read from the point that Moshe makes an appearance where Moshe's name doesn't show up. It's not exactly true, because Parshiot and Dvarim don't have his name because he's talking, many Parshiot. But in any case, in Shmot and Vayikra and Bamidbar, it's the only one where his name doesn't show up, and it's Hakiyuma v'imayin mecheninam m'sifrecha, God, if you don't forgive them, take me out of your book. Cute little vort, not very meaningful here, but in any case, Parshat Tetzaveh is a difficult parsha because it's essentially made up of three parts. The first part seems to be a continuation of Parshat Truma in that it's preparation for the Mishkan. But the preparation that's done here is of the garments that are going to be made for Aharon. And then at the very end, there's a mention of the garments for his sons in like one line. But the garments for Aharon in great detail are listed. And the end of the Parsha has a few more things about the setup of the Mishkan, which includes the Korban Tamid that's to be brought on the Mizbeach, seemingly here not as its regular daily thing, but as part of the dedication. And then the Mizbeach HaKtoret, which shows up at the very end of the parasha. In the middle is a passage which, as you see here, is long. It's 37 psukim, which is about the investiture of the Kohanim. And the investiture of the Kohanim is something that, by and large, is overlooked, not because it's not significant, but because, first of all, it is unlike, let's say, the Mizbach HaKtoret or the Bigdei Kuna, it's a one-time deal. It's going to happen, and they're invested. There's nothing that says that in future years, when Pinchas and his great-grandson, etc., become invested as a Kohanim, that they have to go through this procedure. It's a one-time procedure. Right, and it seems also very detailed, and it doesn't really seem to speak to us very much. So I figured this would be an opportunity to tackle it and take a look at it. I noticed something interesting, is that there is a milah mancha, a key word, in this parasha. And the key word is the verb to take. It starts off, v'zeh davar asher ta'aseh lahem l'kadesh otam, at the beginning. So this is the goal of this entire piece, is to sanctify them, and them being the Kohanim, l'chaim li. And then lakach, take, and we're going to see what it is he takes. In the next section, lakachta tab gedim, then lakachta shemen hamishcha, then lakachta midam hapar, lakachta kol achelev, then v'tayel achatikach, v'shachata lakachta. And again, you turn the page and you'll see that I've divided this essentially into 14 sections, each one of them guided by the word lakach. Some of them are one pasuk long, like the fourth section on the page and the sixth section on the first page. And some of them are seven psukim, like the last section on the second page. So what is it that's going on here in this very detailed procedure, much of which could have been sort of short-cutted by saying, and do to that as you did to the earlier one, instead of getting a lot of the details here? And what is the real goal of this entire process? The question that's really lurking in the back of my mind is, well, what is this telling us? Because why do we need to know this? All right, so of course, there's the stock answer, which is an accurate answer, which is it's Torah, and it's part of how the Mishkan was dedicated and how things were inaugurated, so we need to know it. But is there anything else going on? So let's take a look. We're not going to read through the whole piece, but just take a look at it sort of as a sketch. And so I highlighted in purple, royal purple, deliberate, the word lakach, right? And there were several other words that you'll see highlighted here. Interestingly, the word dam, which normally should play a central role in this, only shows up a few times. And I highlighted to show, it shows up, I think, three or four times in the whole piece. six times, but not that many. And there's one last thing, is the word Kodesh, which you would think is a prime word here, and it is. But you'll notice that on the front page, which is the first half of this passage, it shows up a total of two times. Turn the page and look for the blue, especially at the end. And there is something going on there, and we will hope I'll make a suggestion as to what it is. So the first thing that Moshe is told to take, and this is all Moshe orchestrating it, meaning God telling Moshe what to do, but Moshe's the director of all of this, or should I say the actor in all of this. So he says, you take one par and two elim, one bull and two rams, right? And a bunch of different breads, right? Different kinds of loaves, and you put them in a basket, and you bring them all together, and you bring Aharon, and that's all one lekicha, meaning one lekicha of animals, loaves, and the people involved.
Is there a specification as to the different breads?
The different what?
Breads.
Yeah. I'll take a look at it, because you asked.
And why would there be a necessity of many different breads?
Right? Because each... Okay, good. I'm going to actually touch on that point, Bill. Lechem matzot, which is regular loaves that are matzot. None of this is chametz. Chalot matzot, which are belulot basham, mixed with oil. And rikihei matzot, meshuchim basham, which means they're crackers that have oil rubbed on top of them. So the three different principal kinds of menachot, of grain offerings, are brought here. And you can see how that loops in. The second thing that Moshe is told to take is to take the begadim, and to put all the begadim on Aharon, and the begadim on just on Aharon, and leading to the mitznefet and the tzitz on top. Then you take, the next thing he takes is the oil to consecrate. And he consecrates Aharon, and then he consecrates his sons, and he puts on their begadim also. So that happens afterwards. And then you bring the par, and Aharon and his sons all do smicha on this par. What are they doing? They're putting their hands on the animal as if it's their korban. Okay? And then you're going to shacht it. Right? You're going to shacht the par right in front of the opening to the Mishkan. Now, of course, none of this is happening yet, and the Mishkan hasn't been built. There's all plans for what happens when the Mishkan is built, how you're going to inaugurate them. Then you take, what's the next thing you take? You take the Dam HaPar, and you put it on the Mizbeach, on the corners of the Mizbeach, and you pour the rest of the Dam out, which makes this a Chatat, classic Chatat. Okay?
Chatat means?
Sin offering.
Right, okay.
All right, the next thing is, you're going to take all of the fats, in other words, all the parts of the animal that normally go on the Mizbeach, and you're going to put them on the Mizbeach, and what's going to happen to the meat, which is normally eaten? This gets burned. Why does this get burned? Because it turns out that this dam is going to be put on the inner Mizbeach, and just like we're familiar from Yom HaKippurim, any chatat where the dam goes on the inner Mizbeach, the meat is burned outside of the city. That's what's going to happen here. So right now, this looks like something that we already know from the future, as one of the korbanot that's brought on Yom HaKippurim. Then we go to the sixth thing on the first page, b'ta'ayel achad tikach. We have two rams here. So take the first ram, and again they do smich on it. Then you do shechita and take the dam and put it al hamizbeach saviv. Al hamizbeach saviv, remember the other one was on the four corners. Here it's al hamizbeach saviv, which makes it an olah. It's an olah, right? And then you're going to cut it up, and you're going to burn it up, and it is an olah, as it says in the pasuk. Now turn the page. Then you're going to take the second aisle. Now, why are the two elim here? And are the two elim the same? If we get caught up in the Yom Kippur pattern, we're going to say they are the same. We're going to begin to think about the two goats and the lottery. That's not what's happening here. The second aisle, again, they do smicha on it. They do shechita on it. They take the dam. And what are they going to do with the dam of the second one? They put it on Aharon and his sons, on their ear, on the thumb, on the toe, which sounds exactly like what procedure? The procedure done for a mitzorah in the purification, right? And on their begadim as well. Then you're going to take all of the fats, burn them up on the mizbeach, and then you're going to take the loaves. right? And you're going to put it all on Aharon's hands, and Aharon's going to lift it up.
Why the loaves?
Yeah, good question. Why the loaves?
I mean, I have the whole thing on loaves.
But why the loaves here? Why the loaves here? That's what Bill also asked about the different kinds.
How many loaves?
Right? We don't have a number here. We're going to assume 30, because typically set is 10. And there's three sets here. Right?
You get three sets of actions with the loaves?
No, three sets of loaves. If you look at the beginning, it's lacha matzot, chalot matzot, and rikike matzot. Right?
Uh-huh.
It's everything that you have in a todah minus the chametz. Right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But what do they do with the bread?
Let's hear. Okay, so they put it in a basket, and Aharon lifts it up, and then what do? You're going to burn it all on the Mizbeach as an olah, as an olah. However, the other ram still hasn't been processed. And this is, I think, where the real informative thing happens. Look in the second to last passage on the second page. What are you going to do? L'kachtata chazeh. You're going to take the torso of the second ram. Now, the first ram is all burnt up. It's an olah. The bread all gets burnt up.
Yes.
But as burnt up as mincha, but remember it's minchat kohanim, and any minchat kohanim is fully burnt up. So this fits the model. This is the one that's weird.
Those sacrifices that are completely burned up, theoretically, go to Hashem? That's where they're
it all goes to Hashem.
Right.
Burnt up, not burnt up. It's all given to Hashem. What's it all? So let's finish.
But kohanim do participate in some of the sacrifices, don't they?
They participate in all the sacrifices.
I mean, they eat.
They eat from typically a chatat, and they eat from a shlomim. Yeah, I'm going to actually get to it. You're asking all the questions
sorry.
That lead to the answer.
Sorry.
No, it's perfect.
But
perfect.
Eluim is a reference to the second.
Let's see. Okay. Now, we're going to read this part through pasuk by pasuk. L'kachtata chazeh. Me'el ha-miluim. Now, the word miluim means investiture. It's not like miluim today. It means the process of inauguration. Right, the 7 days leading up to, and this is going to be a 7-day process. If you're going to do this every day for 7 days, it's called Yimei Miluim. V'lakachtata chazeh me'el ha-miluim. So this second aisle is called El ha-miluim, the inauguration ram. And you're going to take the torso, and you're going to lift it up before Hashem, and then it becomes your portion, which means you're going to eat it. Here's to the eating. V'kidashter chazeh tnufa ve'tshok ha-truma. So not only that, the torso, but also one of the back legs is going to be left up. It belongs to Aaron and his sons. You're going to lift it up and sanctify it. And this will now be, now the word chok here is meant in what very likely is its original meaning, which is, I mean the original meaning is engraving, but an engraved law, which means a ration of food. This is the Chok Olam Epnei Yisrael, meaning this portion is what's going to be given to Aaron forever. Because remember, what happens when we bring a shlamim, a peace offering? So part goes on the Mizbeach, part goes to the Kohanim, part goes to us. But what we have to give the Kohanim, the Chazeh Vashok, the torso and one of the back legs, this is where it starts. Ki Trumahi. Trumahi Epnei Yisrael, Zivchei Shalmayim, Trumatam Ladunai. Now notice, this is not being treated like a shlamim, and yet it's becoming sort of the anchor for the shlamim. And the Kohanim's clothes are going to go to their sons. And for 7 days, his son will wear it. And it sounds like the Kohen Gadol goes through this sort of process of inauguration. Now, the eight El Hamiluim Tikach. Last piece. What's the last thing you're taking? You're taking the El Hamiluim, which means that there's still meat from it. Remember, you offered up the fats, you offered up all the breads, you gave part of it to the Kohanim. You're going to cook it, Makom Kadosh, just like Shlamim. And now we find out that the bread is left in the sal, and they're going to be eating that in front of Olam Moed, meaning in the Azara. What?
So it wasn't
all burned. They will eat it, and that will be the kapara to inaugurate them. The kadesh otam v'zar lo yachal ki kodeshem, and it cannot be eaten by non kohanim, right? V'im yivater v'zar miluim ashmi lechem adav boker so aftat anotar ba'esh lo yachal ki kodeshu. And if anything's left over, then you have to destroy it and burn it up. It can't be eaten. It's kodesh. You're going to do this for Aaron for 7 days and his sons. And there's a separate parchatat. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, this is how you're going to sanctify the mizbeach. The mizbeach itself is going to become kodesh kodashim. Kodesh Kodeshim in the sense not the holiest of holies, but a holy thing that sanctifies others. And anybody, anything that touches it becomes sanctified, which means anything that touches it has to go on the Mizbeach. Obviously not things that aren't fit for the Mizbeach, like people. What's going on in this procedure? Very strange. Just to recap. So this is how you're going to sanctify your brother and your nephews. You take par, two elim, all these loaves, and then you take Aharon. Then you put the clothes on Aharon. Then you put the oil on Aharon. And then you put the clothes and the oil and sanctify his sons. Then you have them put their hands on the par, shecht it, and the dam goes on the four corners of the Mizbeach. It's the parts are burnt up, and that's the Mizbeach. And the animal gets burnt outside. There's your chatat. You start off with a chatat. Okay, I get it. Chatat doesn't just mean you did something wrong in your head. God said it's like a cleansing. So I might preface the Kiddushah. I'm cool with that. The second is an ayil, and the ayil is an olah, and it's treated like an olah. And it's the ayil that belongs to Aaron and his sons. They do smich on it, and it all fits because this actually fits the model that we know from Yom Kippur. We have a chatat and an olah. And the chatpar l'chatat, ayil le'olah, fits fine. The part that's surprising is the second aisle. What's done with the second aisle? So first of all, the dam of the second aisle is put on Aaron and his sons like the purification of Metzorah. That's A. B, the second thing is that we take the aisle and we treat it like a shlamim, and we give the gifts to Aaron and they lift them up, and this establishes that those gifts are always going to be coming from Bnei Yisrael when they bring their shlamim. And that's going to go to Aharon. And then Aharon actually eats that with the loaves, which is odd because this loaf should be a minchat kohanim, should be burned up, but it's not. They're supposed to eat it. Some real confusion going on. And the last thing that's interesting is that at the end of this entire procedure, then suddenly the word kodesh, as you see, pops up. Half of that last paragraph is blue. And this is what sanctifies them and sanctifies the mizbeach. So I can't answer for all the details, especially not in a short amount of time. But I want to draw some broad lines, and we'll see if they seem to work. The first thing is we start with an assumption that holy people are called to do holy things. Holy people are called to do holy things. Or to put it in a broader way, competent people are asked to do difficult things. And you don't ask somebody who's incompetent. This is true when the action that we're talking about is result-oriented and where the stakes are too high. When you have an emergency and somebody has to get to the hospital, you don't ask a 14-year-old kid who just finished driver's ed to drive the ambulance. You ask somebody who's an experienced driver, who's going to be cool under pressure, to do it. The stakes are too high. However, how does somebody become competent? And this is something of a vicious cycle. You become competent by doing things, but you're only asked to do the things when you're competent. So what's the answer? We do the things in a trial environment. We do the things in a simulated environment. We do things in a safe environment. We go driving for the first time in a parking lot somewhere or on a side street where there's lots of time and there's no rush and it's all good, and maybe with the worst car in the family. So it's not a big deal if you bump it here and there, right? We do that a little bit and build it up. But we think that when it comes to sanctified things, we have to ask people who are already sanctified. And then we have to ask the question. If we're asking somebody who's sanctified to do the sanctified thing, what's the outcome? The outcome is the thing gets done. The korban gets offered. What's the outcome vis-a-vis the officiant, vis-a-vis the person we asked to do it? The answer is nothing.
You what?
He nothing. Right? You ask somebody who's competent to go do something. He goes and does it. And it's done.
Except paraduma.
What?
Except the paraduma.
Oh, there might be halachic implications. Yeah. Correct. I mean, become tamei as a result. Correct. By the way, the guy who carries the seir lazazel out, he becomes tamei. Also, there's also all sorts of other places in which your involvement in some avodah will actually put you out of commission a little bit. Correct. But spiritually, personally, growth-wise, whatever you want to call it, we'll say he's already competent, therefore he did it. Look at this parshan, you'll see something very different. We start with Aharon uvanav. They're the ones who were selected. And yet, what happens to them at the end of this process? First of all, how's the process introduced? V'zeh ha'davar she'tase lahem likadesh otam, which means?
They're not yet kadesh.
Right. Right. And what happens at the end of this?
They're sanctified.
Long day.
Yeah. This is how they become kodesh. Right? So they become kodesh. And by the way, as a result of it, what else? The Mizbeach becomes kodesh.
And we become.
And then we become now part of a procedure because of the Chazan Shok. We become part of a procedure that sanctifies us as well. But here's the mystery to it. I'm starting, let's say, on a Sunday. Right? Let's say that the first day of the Milim is a Sunday. So on Sunday, Moshe takes Aharon, Uvanav, does this procedure in order to Lekadesh Otam, sanctify them. So what happens? Finish the procedure. What happens the next day? Got to do it again.
You mean they're bringing a new korban every day?
Yeah, 7 days. Got to do this whole thing. So what's happening? Does that mean that when they went to sleep, poof, the Kedusha was gone, they got to do it again? If that's the case, what's going to happen after 7 days? After 7 days, it sticks. No. Seems that what's happening is that Aharon uvanav are coming in, and they've already been designated, but not inaugurated. So your inauguration is doing the same thing 7 times, and at the end of each one of them, you become kadosh. But what happens the next morning? So that means you become more kadosh. That means that what happens is, over time and with procedure, this Mizbeach and these people and these Begadim intensify in their Kedusha.
Are they changing the clothing each day to new
clothes? Nope.
So they come out with the bloody clothes?
There's no blood on the clothes.
I thought they were sprinkled.
No, on the ear.
Oh, on just the ear.
Yeah. But I want you to picture this. Aharon uvanav on that first day are designated, and now they become Kodesh. The clothes become Kodesh. The Mizbeach becomes Kodesh. What happens the next day? Ramp it up more. And ramp it up more and ramp it up more. And when it's been ramped up 7 times, we're ready to go. What's going to happen on day 8?
Now it's
that's flatlined? No, it's not flatlined. What happens is when you engage with Kedusha, you become sanctified. And if the result of that is that you now re-engage with Kedusha, and there has not been some sort of a slippage on your part, you're now starting at that level and moving up again, moving up even further. Engagement with Kedusha demands a Kadosh, but engagement with Kedusha is Mekadesh. You need to be Kadosh to step in, but for the procedure, the experience, the interaction of being there in the Mishkan, of being there in the Chatzer and doing these korbanot is Mekadesh you and brings you up to a new level, a new layer, a new level of understanding, whatever it may mean. And the Kedusha is not a binary function of Kadosh or not Kadosh. It is true about objects. Objects either are Kadosh or not. It's not true about people. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Kedoshim to you, that doesn't mean don't pick A, pick B. It means pick B, and then pick B even better, and then pick B even better than that. And each day and each time and each experience, intensify it. Because you look at this experience that looks like you're starting on a, watching on a, not an oscillator, but a meter. It starts at zero. At the end of the day, you're already in the red. Great. What happens the next day? Don't tell me you go back to zero. Because there's no point to it. What it means is we're recalibrating. And suddenly where we were yesterday was at the end of the road is the beginning of today's road, and we're going to keep going. So the chap is, what are Aaron and his son supposed to do? They're supposed to continue doing it. It's a 7-day process of raising yourself. So what do we do to make sure that they don't go home at night and lose it all? So what does it say in Parshat Tzav? Ufetach om way teshvu yomam v'layla. They have to live there for 7 days. They have to be constantly in that environment of Kiddushah, no distractions, no family life, no nothing else for 7 days. And then at the end of that, it's so internalized, it's so strong, that it's going to then be able to carry over. You think about it as it speaks to us. First of all, we think we can only get engaged when we're Kadosh. That's not true. Get engaged, become Kadosh. And the second thing is, we think that there's a plateau. There are no plateaus. There are no plateaus. There's either going up or going down. And going up is a constant process of going up and of constantly resetting. I mean, think about how we do it in so many other areas. Resetting what our boundaries are. You know, when you start doing a hobby or whatever, athletic thing, whatever it might be, you say, ooh, today I'm going to do this much. Then the next day you say, oh, that's easy, and I'm going to do this much. I'm going to ski a blue. I'm going to ski a plat. Double plat.
How do you relate this to like six days of creation and the seventh day of rest, if there's any connection to this one?
No, that's a good question. That's a much longer piece of how we look at Shabbat within the context of its relationship to that kind of growth.
Like Brit Milah being on the eighth day.
Right, but when you think about this more in the context of Taharat Metzorah, who's also a 7-day process. Right? And this, as you see, lifts a little piece of Taharat HaMetzorah from it. All right? And Taharat HaMetzorah, as we said a couple of years ago, is the process of coming from essentially death.
Is the Kodesh Kedoshim happen on the seventh day or on the eighth day? At the end of the 7 days.
This happens every day. It happens every day. Look at it. Shivat Yamin. Doesn't say Yom HaShvi. You have to do this 7 times. And after that level of intensity and constantly recalibrating the cycle.
I thought you hit
Kodesh Kodeshim
at the end of the process.
See it? No, read the Pasuk. Shivat Yamin Mizbeach
V'Kidashto Oto. Kodeshim.
Maybe. But then, what happens after day 4? Like, where is it?
You haven't finished the process.
So, again, so what does that mean? Is it Kodesh or not Kodesh?
It's Kodesh, but not Kodeshim.
Maybe. Maybe that's what it means. Could be. Okay. In any case, just something to think about. And to see how this one-time procedure that we read about twice, both here and in Tzav, on a historic level, everything else is, again, part of the past and relatively obscure. But when it comes to what it may be saying to us about our own Avodat Hashem, may actually be quite powerful and hopefully inspirational.